Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Welcome to Wrestling It Factor Radio, the show with the most inside of news of wrestling facts, also all the headlines and even throughout politics in the world, even entertainment and sports news also. Hey, how's it going, ladies and gentlemen? Yeah, we have Lester Spinks, a.k.a. Terry Tate, also known as Rasta the Voodoo Man from Global Wrestling Federation. He'll stop by to talk definitely on what he's doing and his history in wrestling and entertainment business. And one a reminder, we will be back tomorrow night at 10:30 for the interview of AJ Frost. Also, the news broke out the day about Global Force Wrestling. It's big announcement on the roster that's going to be part of Global Force Wrestling. And Jeff Jarrett actually announced that they're going to be joining them as TV analyst Chael Sonnen, former UFC fighter and ESPN broadcaster. Also, that's going to be a part of Global Force Wrestling. Thale, you know her as Rosita from formerly of TNA, even part of the Rosebud Express from in WWE of Adam Rose. Also, Lady Tampa, formerly of TNA, Moose, Ojawaya from Ring of Honor, that's going to be part of it. That's the big shocker right there. Is he no longer with Ring of Honor? You also have part of the Bullet Club, Gallows and Carl Anderson. Also going to be there, the Killer Elite squad of Davey Boy Smith Jr., Lance Hoyt. They already signed PJ Black, the former Justin Gabriel of WWE, going to be a part of it. And also Sonata, that recently left TNA weeks ago, that's going to be part of it also. Also, Trish Masters is going to be part of it, Trish Modeski. Ladies and gentlemen, we have for you Lester Spake. You may know his roles as part of My Wife and Kids and also GWF Wrestling. Give it up for him.
How's everybody doing?
Everyone's good. Welcome to Wrestling It Factor.
Wrestling Insiders. Okay. What's the inside scoop? Am I making a comeback?
Maybe.
No, I would need WrestleMania to do that. Get back in the ring. But you know, money talks, BS walks, right?
Exactly. Anything can happen in this business.
That's right. Every man has a price. Who used to say that? The IRS? Or was it Million Dollar Man?
Everybody got a price for the Million Dollar Man.
That was Ted DiBiase, right? Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So what can I do for your audience this evening?
You know, we'll talk about your days and Global Wrestling Federation, and also your football days, and also going and your past movies and television shows.
What about my future movies and television shows?
Yeah, we're going to definitely talk about that also, and including also the Freddie Dre. What's going on right now with Freddie Drave and Baltimore City?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Sad situation. But it's reality, and
right.
It's been going on since we stepped foot in this country, on this land, and you know, anything can bend, but sometimes even whatever is bendable can break. And
right.
So now, it's sad that it takes a platform like a riot to create a platform that is now what it is, that has gotten so much national exposure, and that, as I said in my Facebook blog comment, that Baltimore now is going to be the paradigm of what cities, inner cities with predominantly black or people of color, low poverty, income stricken people, Baltimore is going to be that paradigm, that model that people are going to look at now as we shape this model and formulate and entertain certain things in terms of government. You know, Baltimore's been a liberal city for many years, and I wrote in my blog that it's time to, you know, we've been on the left side, so now maybe it's possibly time to look at other parties or entertain the thought of breaking up the monotony and the monotone government that has been structured there since 1939, pretty much. There's only been two Republicans in office in Baltimore. So, I know a lot of people don't expect to hear all those kind of comments coming from me, but I use my platform not just, you know, to say it was, you know, cool and trendy and faddish, but also to speak about what's real, because even though I play characters that are not real, I'm real. And so it's one thing to understand that actors or certain people in the public figures have, to me, responsibilities if they choose to use their platform to shine light on areas of darkness that otherwise may be ignored. So, and I don't know if you wanted me to go into it now, but I kind of took the liberty to go into it, man. So I'll let you run the show, Wayne. I'm just, you know, I'm just your pawn, man. You can move me around the board wherever you want, man. And then maybe we can
right.
checkmate later, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Yes. What are your memories of playing football in the USFL?
USFL was a very flash in the past. It's I got some very fond memories, even though the league didn't, the league went to defunct. Donald Trump basically, when he voted, when the owners voted to continue the league, all the owners voted to continue the league. He's the only one that voted to say, let's take a year off. And you pretty much can't have a major sports franchise without a New York-based team. So he killed that, and then that was the year I signed. After going to an open USFL trial camp, and I ran the fastest 40 out of 400 participants. I actually ran 4.21, and then I ran a 4.27, and then I ran 4.3 twice. And you was only supposed to run two times. I ran five times. They couldn't believe it. I really couldn't believe it. I didn't realize I was running that fast. But I had trained for it. I changed up my running style because I've always been a long-gated runner, changed up my running style, running track. I've always was a quarter-mile horse with a long stride. So I really just reworked the whole sprinting formality that I needed, that I exemplified, kind of what it, somewhat what Usain Bolt is doing. You know, I look at him, I go, man, if I would have kept running, like if I would have ran, say for instance, if I would have ran in the track meet, like a month from that day that I ran that 40, and then I kept my sweatpants on because I wanted to look bigger. I was like 235, and I'm trying to play linebacker, so I didn't, I'm trying to look bigger and heavier, heavy down low, everything, man. And who knows what I would have ran if I would have just taken my sweatpants off. And if I would have ran that time for the U.S. for the NFL Combine, I wouldn't be here today because my whole life would have been altered if I would have actually played professional football. So, but I was grateful that my cousin and I, my cousin Butch and I, we negotiated my contract. It came down to a bidding war between the Baltimore Stars and the Memphis Showboats, and I ended up signing with the Baltimore Stars. And, of course, like I said earlier, that's when Mr. Trump said, well, let's take a year off, and then the USFL went down the toilet. But I had some very fond memories, and Lida Mitchell, who used to be Hall of Fame running back for the Baltimore Colts, he was the player personnel director for the USFL Baltimore Stars. And he was so impressed with me that he wanted to actually represent me. And it just was a conflict of interest. And then when I tried to segue into the NFL, I'm trying to remember what happened, I ended up signing with some agents, some very novice agents out of D.C. And these two brothers didn't have any connections, man. And then, 1 month, 2 months, then the NFL season came around. And from there, when the NFL season came around, then I couldn't do anything else but other than just just walked away from the game, from the sport. Hold on.
Bread and stuff in the sink.
Oh, that bread and stuff.
I mean,
go ahead. Wayne?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. We lost for a second.
Right. And what got your interest in training to be a pro wrestler in the business?
I grew up watching wrestling, and a friend of mine, Dave Coleman, he really started wrestling in the early 80s. He went up and joined the Tillico Wrestling School up in Boston, Massachusetts. He used to catch the train. Sometimes he's through, but he catch the train from Annapolis, Maryland, all the way up to Boston. He would catch the train. And he started wrestling. So he started wrestling like 5 years before I actually started. And he's the one that brought me into the business. And so we started doing a little locking up and learning, some of the kind of Greco-Roman moves at the gym in Annapolis, Maryland, Annapolis Health and Fitness. That gym is not even in, gym has been closed for a long time. But that's when I started. I wasn't ready to walk away from being a professional athlete. And it was like 1988. My mom just passed away, and I just needed things to keep my mind occupied. And so I started wrestling. And not too long after I started wrestling, then started in the Universal Independent Wrestling League out of Baltimore. And then a couple other independents around Baltimore, around the East Coast, and then Global called after they heard about me. I came up with this gimmick called the Roster the Voodoo Man. Actually, it's called Mon, not Man. Most people say Voodoo Man, but it's the Voodoo Mon. And they liked it, and they brought me in. They flew me to Dallas, and, they gave me a push. And we done several TV tapings. It was pretty good. I had a good little run with them. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Did you think that they copy your gimmick and used it for Papa Shango?
I had some feelings that they, they look around at the independents to get ideas. So I had a feeling that, you know, I was somewhat flattered. You know, imitation sometimes is the highest form of flattery that they say. So, but yeah, I felt like, Papa Shango probably was a more polished wrestler at the time. And that's probably why they went with him, because I was very green. And so for those who don't know what green is, that's when you just getting started in a certain trade. And you don't have all the experience of maybe somebody who's been doing it 5 years, 10 years. So you make rookie mistakes because you're green, you know. So, but my whole thing about being green is I try to stay green all the way through life. Because as long as you're green, you're learning. That means you're alive. And if you look at a leaf on a tree, as long as that leaf is green, if the tree's alive or that leaf is alive. But the minute it turns brown, then a good little wind comes by, that little leaf could be up in the air floating through somebody else's yard. So I want to stay green. And but that's usually a term associated with people, you know, like rookies that come in to play football, basketball, whatever sport, you're green. And but yeah, I had a feeling that Vince and them kind of like, you know, wanted to take that idea and see what they could do with it. And
right.
They did. They came up with Papa Shango. So, but I'm the original Voodoo Man. People know that.
All right.
Real wrestling fans know that.
That's right. And do you have any wrestling road stories?
Oh man, you know, yeah, you talking about like being on the road, like just going from city to city is town to town, you know.
Right.
One thing about wrestling, man, it's a traveling circus, and you get to. You know, you get to see parts of the country, man, that you don't normally get to see all the time. And real hardcore wrestling fans in towns really take care of the boys. You know, I've been invited to people's homes after matches, before matches. It's special because, you know, you get to meet some great people of this country, real U.S. American citizens who love this country, real patriots. Whether they hate you or love you, you get to go to their town and excuse me, you go to their town and you walk out and you just look in their eyes and they just they're just gazing at you and looking at you on a poster for months, and then next thing you know you're there. But, traveling on the independent circuit, you get to pair up with people because, you want to save money. And sometimes you don't want to drive, and you get a jabroni to drive. And so you got a bunch of veterans in the car, and we're cutting up. I remember one story. One time it was me, Junkyard Dog, Pez Wiley, all of us was traveling somewhere in Georgia. And we were, like, hungry. And so I got a big appetite. Everybody in that car had a big appetite. But Pez is, like, trying to convince us, let's just get something to eat. And so we finally stopped somewhere, and he had some hot dogs or something like that. And I'm like, man, I need some more than hot dogs, man. I ain't built this body on no damn hot dogs. And so Pez is like, well, it's either you eat the hot dogs, because, sometimes when you're traveling, it's very remote areas. It's like, you might get a gas station here. You might not see another gas station for like 100 miles. And he's like, you better eat something now. That will make a turd. And I was like, I never thought about it like that. So I said, okay, I better eat something so I can make my, my body make a turd. And Junkyard Dog thought that was funny. He's like, that's right, brother. You better get something because we don't know when the next stop. So those are the older heads that was telling me, you know, sharing a little wisdom with me, but it's just the personalities of guys, what you saw on in the ring and their personalities, that's how pretty much what they were like behind closed doors. So, yeah.
And was there any interest from any other companies like WCW and WWE?
Yeah, I never really had interest from WWE. I know Buffett. Yeah, I'm thinking about another company. I actually went down, and that's how I got a chance to know Perez Wiley. I went to the power plant in the mid-90s. And went down there. That was one of the hardest physical things I ever had to do, was go through the power plant. I mean, it was no joke. And so I used to, you know, trying to get on with the company, I used to travel with them on, to the TV tapes, you know, the Monday Night Nitro. So wherever they were going up and down the East Coast, if it was pretty much on the East Coast, I was putting my gas in my car, driving. I had maybe one or two of the guys from the power plant. We would drive down, and I was trying to get notice. I mean, I'm in the back, walking around, 6'6", 330 pounds, you know, and all constantly after Nitro, we would all go to a hotel and have drinks at the bar, and sometimes, you know, I walk in, Macho Man be like, oh, look at this brother here, oh, he's so big. When y'all gonna put him, you know? Just Hogan would come up to me and touch me on the shoulders and like, man, we got to do something with you, Bishop. But they never came out. And and then WWE, I did go up there in 1999, and I went to Dory Funk's WWE training camp. And Kurt Angle was in my class. John Silver was in my class. Blue Meanie was one of my roommates, and I had to get him. I actually had to request another room because he snored so much I couldn't take it. When I was in Global, Norman the Maniac, I've never heard of any other human being, especially any other human being, snoring the way he snored. I mean, he snored so loud that I actually thought I heard some heifers outside the door congregating. And for those who don't know what heifer is, that's a female cow. I thought they was out there waiting for him, ready to mate, because this brother was pulling the paint off the top of the ceiling. And I had to get relocated with him because he kept me up the first night we were down there, the first night at the hotel. And then the second night I caught myself getting to bed before he got to bed, you know, to get to sleep. And he woke me up in my sleep, and then I had to tell the promoter, you got to give me another room. Went through the same thing with the Blue Meanie. He just had very, let's just say he had intestinal problems, and I had some oxygen problems, if you will, if you know what I mean. And so I couldn't take him no more either, so that's that.
Awesome. Also, how was it like playing the character Terry Tate on the Reebok commercials?
Terry Tate was awesome, man. I love Terry. Terry has a special place in our lives, and that was actually the first major role. It wasn't a major role when I booked it. It was just a independent film. And Terry Tate went from an independent film to a major apparel company campaign. Reebok was number two apparel company in the world. Nike's number one. And it just was a short film from the director named Rawson Marshall Thurber, who you've probably seen his work. He's done Dodgeball. He did Wheel of the Millers last year, shot that director. Now he's shooting a movie with Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart called Central Intelligence. So Ross has been quite busy, very successful, and he was just a young film student out of USC, and he was watching Monday Night Football and saw John Randall that played for the Vikings and all his antics. You know, he was a crazy nose tackle. And he saw John Randall just acting crazy. He thought, you know, it would be funny to put a football player in the office. And he had a casting call. I was home in Baltimore at the time. My agent called me and said, I'm going to fax you over this this little script for this short movie. I think you'd be good for it. And keep in mind, I'm just fresh to L.A. This is like in 2000, the summer of 2000. And when I read the script, it was like about 10 pages. It had so many cuss words in it, so many swears. I was like, oh, I can't play this motherfucker right here. I can't play anything. So I flew back to L.A. and went in for the audition. And he had auditioned like 100 people, I think, or 75 people. He couldn't find a guy that he liked. And then when I walked in, I knocked it out. And that was all she wrote.
Definitely had so much success, even doing the Super Bowl commercials. Also, that was one of the best commercial segments than any other commercial.
Thank you.
Yeah. What's your memories of being a part of Any Given Sunday?
It was good. I got good memories, man. You know, anytime you're working in Miami, if you're not making some good memories, you're doing something wrong. I kind of did my thing. I hung out, made some good friends and good connections, and they had the fight between Jamie and LL. I was kind of in Jamie's little clique because I used to roll with them and see if they had parties and hung out with them. And Oliver Stone, every time he used to see me, I went down there as an extra. I went down on the cattle call. And I chose not to play football in the movie because I was already done with football. And I didn't think that being in a football uniform was going to get me, you know, help me to stand out as an actor. So even though I was one of the biggest guys on the field out there, my strategy paid off because Oliver Stone, you know, he used to see me all the time, well, you're going to be a star. You're going to be a star. And then one day he gave me a scene with Al Pacino calling me to come break this fight up. And so I'm improvising the scene, and I'm on a Jumbotron, I'm on the little screen, and you got Al Pacino calling me. I'm trading lines with Al Pacino. You couldn't tell me nothing after that. I just thought I was, you know, I'm like, I'm trading lines with Tony Montana. Oh, man. All right. Okay. You know, like, I made the big times now. I'm ready for an Oscar role. He's like, slow down, Lester. You know, take it slow, you know. But, yeah, I had some great times, man. The women in Miami are incredible. I probably have about 5 kids in Miami, and they would be grown right about now almost.
How was it working with Al Pacino and even now including actors like Jamie Foxx?
How was it working with Al Pacino?
Yes.
It was great. That's what I just got from the saying. I'm like, just work with him. And Jamie was at the time, you know, I wasn't Jimmy Fox. I mean, I was cool with Jimmy. I think he had the Jimmy Fox show, but Jimmy Fox wasn't, you know, he was on the rise, but I wasn't, you know, it's no comparison between Jamie and then Al Pacino at the time for me. But Jamie was an up and rising star in coming up, and he did a good job, man. He was a great athlete. Like, he's one of the best athlete actors besides myself, of course. He's one of the best actors. I mean, he threw a tight spiral. I mean, he threw that sucker 50 yards. I mean, he rolled out on a pitch, on an option, and threw the ball. I mean, I was like, man, Jamie could have played. You know, I think he was all county or something for his high school. So he's a tremendous athlete.
Right.
And Dennis Quaid wasn't bad either. Dennis Quaid threw a nice ball. Because the cast was incredible. I mean, you know, it was an incredible cast. You had Matthew Modine, Bill Bellamy, Lawrence Taylor, was Cameron Diaz. I remember one time Jamie got Cameron Good. She had some locker room scenes, and there's this one scene where she had to, you know, come in and confront Jamie's character. So he's in a towel. So one of the takes, she came in, and halfway through her dialogue, he dropped the towel. And she tried, and I'm just watching her eyes, man. She just, like, he just sitting there butt naked, and he got a good. And so soon the scene was over, she just ran out. She got a quick look. I saw her look. Like, she did get her look on. I'm like, okay. But it was good times, man. It was good times.
What was it like to be a part of my wife and kids' television show?
Damon Wayans, Kim, Dante, the whole family, man. It's just a great clan of people to work with. The interesting thing about that is I went in for one guest star spot. And one episode turned into 2 years of work. And they just welcomed me, man. They thought I was funny. I thought what they did was funny, man. And I knew my role. And you know, I knew that my character was to make Damon walk on eggshells and intimidate him and what have you, have fun with that. But it just was a great experience, good times. And I didn't realize that, you know, years later, like now, people would, you know, just, you know, crazy about Calvin. And that's the good thing about doing television is you get to come into people's homes every night and their living rooms, and they feel like they know you. And they see you out, or now, because it's social media, they can reach out to you. You know, you make them feel good, or you bring back memories when they were coming home from school and doing their homeworks, and now they're grown people, you know, early 20s, 30s, like yourself, and, you know, you're part of their thought process from being a child or being, you know, being younger. So it's a special thing. Just like when I grew up watching Good Times and Jeffersons, and then I met George Jefferson, Sherman Hemsley, hung out with him for a couple of days, and you just get to see people, real people, just like I'm real people, but you look at him like in a little awe because, you know, you used to try to do that George Jefferson dance, you know, or you try to do something Calvin did. And, you know, whatever fond memory you have, it just makes you feel good when you actually get to reach out and meet that person.
Right. Yeah, he was one of, amazing actor, Sherman Hemsley. It's like every time when the lights are on, he becomes that character right there.
Yeah.
And how was also working with Tisha Campbell also?
Oh, Tisha, she's a sweet man. She's a sweetie. She actually, I think after the third or fourth episode I did, we were sitting either on the couch or sitting somewhere together. We just had a moment, and I think it was at the craft services, and she just told me, you know, very sweet manner, you know, that she was glad that Ella and myself were on the show. That we just gave the show a different energy because, you know, they've done so many episodes up until that point, And then here come the in-laws. We coming in without energy. And she just told me that she just, you know, just glad that we, that, you know, that that we're there, and the show needed another boost of energy, and I thought that was very nice of her to tell me that. She didn't have to tell me that.
Yes. And I remember that your TV daughter on there was going to be Megan Good at first, and they switched it to Brooklyn Sedano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been interesting. Brooklyn was great. And, you know, for those who don't know Brooklyn, mother is Donna Summers, who passed away. I think she passed away last year, if I'm not mistaken. But Brooklyn is a sweet young lady and brilliant actress. And then, yeah, Megan Good was, I think Megan did a couple episodes, and then they came to Brooklyn after that. So, yeah. we all had clicked, you know, we had good energy, you know. People hear me use that word a lot, but that's everything in life is energy. It's the form of life.
Right.
And even when you die, your body still has energy. That's why you decay. So, we're not gonna get out. You know, we're not gonna get in there on that. But you know, but yeah, Brooklyn was great. Ella was great. Let me give Ella a shout out. For those who don't know, Ella Joyce was. You remember a TV sitcom called Rock? That was my homeboy Charles Dutton. Was this sitcom, and Ella played his wife in Rock. That was back in the early 90s, like 91 or 92 or something like that.
Yep, and she still is like she's another good performer right there also.
Yeah, she does a lot of plays, and I think I saw her last year and and something, I saw her guest star in something, I think. I can't remember what it was. Always,
right.
I see her out downtown quite a bit, and I love to see her working. And she, like you said, she's a great actress. She's a great actress.
It's just amazing how the kids on the show are all grown up.
It is. I saw Noah. Is grown up now, and who else is on the show? George is—he's probably in his early 30s or late 20s, and all of them grown up. You know, Jennifer, Katie,
right?
She's got to be probably, you know, 18, 19, 20, something like that.
Right.
You know, kids don't stay young forever. You know, they do grow up. And, you know, there's one thing about being a TV star. Everybody, you know, is in your business your whole life. But,
right.
You know, they still grow up and become young adults. And, man, you got me thinking now. All of them, the whole young cast, all the young kids are grown now. So we had to do a reunion
right.
show. We had to do another show. It wouldn't be my wife and kids. It'd be my wife and my grown-ass kids.
Right. Yeah, it's like ABC now. It's like bringing back all these reunion shows as a TV series. Like they tried with Boys Meet World. They brought that back out with now Girl Meets World for Disney.
Excuse me, what was the other one with Bob Saget? Eight is Enough or something? Or,
Full House?
Full House, yeah, I saw that. They want to bring that back. I think it's like one of the actresses or actors hasn't signed back on yet. I mean, it might be Bob Saget. But reality shows, man, you know, they have their place, but they, I think they run, you know, they make, you know, history repeats itself, Wayne, you know, it's like how many Real Housewives fights can we have? How many all this, you know, all this women, you know, yelling and screaming, you know, you got the Mobsters Housewives, you got the Atlanta Housewives, Orange County Housewives, Hollywood, it's just, you know, the Kardashians, it's like, okay, all right, but people want to get back to real acting and sitcom and real funny, and so
right.
It's time. It's that time again.
Right. Yeah, it's like it's missing the sitcom. It's like they are going extinct, but they need to come back increasing, though. That's the I really miss those 20 to 30 minute sitcoms on a weekly day growing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, what's your memories of working on Cradle to the Grave movie?
Perry, you're going way back now. Okay, we're going to go get, let's do one more after this. Cause we can't go through my whole body of work. I'll be on this phone all night. So, Cradle to the Grave was a nice movie. Again, I went in audition for the role I forget my character's name. Basically, Anthony Anderson and I, we had some really good scenes. He's a funny actor at the time. I was, you know, I really looked forward to working with him. And that was a Joe Silver project. And I remember DMX at the time, if you remember Samuel Jackson making a comment about rappers acting. I don't remember that. He was saying that rappers don't make good actors, they're not professional. And, DMX kind of proved that to be somewhat true because Mr. DMX, he racked up about $900,000 worth of charges in terms of being late and his pit bulls being on set. I mean, he kind of showed up when he wanted to show up. He kind of, you know, he had that whole rapper thing where, you know, because, you know, rappers can show up to a concert late and they can do what they want to do. You can't turn it over to a movie set. You got all professionals on movie sets, cast, crew, and when the call sheet says be here 7 a.m., you got to be there 7 a.m. You can't be coming in at 4. And people sitting around waiting on you. So Joe Silver several times is getting ready to pull the plug on that movie because DMX had violated so many provisions in his contract and holding up the set and causing the studio money. And so that's one thing I remember, sitting around in my trailer waiting on him sometime to get this so we could get to work. And I think now he probably, in hindsight, looks back and go, you know, I had some pretty good opportunities to do some things and I didn't take full advantage of them, or I might have been an asshole, you know, or unprofessional. So for the listeners out there, you know, don't take for granted what you have the capabilities of doing. Because it could be here today and gone today. And so I'm just grateful now in my you know, I'm getting up there in life, getting older, and I'm just grateful that I understand that now. And because I've done some things where I was reckless, and but getting older and learning, you know, I tell people now that don't always have to go through the experience of learning. Learn through other people's mistakes. You know, if I tell you, Wayne, that fire is hot, don't touch it. Don't go, oh, yeah, you're right, it is hot. Well, it is. You touched it. That's how you just couldn't take my word for it. So if you trust in people, you know, trust in God first, but, you know, you've got older folks, older people around you, or people that you feel that can give you, shed some wisdom on something. Some things in life we do have to experience ourselves, but then some mistakes you just don't want to, some experiences you don't want to become mistakes, because if you can avoid it, because it could be a setback. And and DMX, you know, he was the lead and the star of several action-packed movies. And then he could have taken that. Now, imagine if he would have just kept working hard, stayed humble, stayed grateful, feel blessed. All those things, work hard on your craft, take a couple classes here and there, you know, be a student of the game. What would DMX be today? Stay off, get off of drugs, get your support system around you so people can help you get off the drugs, lean a clean light, work out at the gym, eat good, raise your kids. I mean, it sounds like a lot of hard work, but it's not if you enjoy what you're doing and you're grateful to be where you need to be. And I need to say that in this podcast as well. You're not just all, you know, working with these people that your listeners need to hear some words of wisdom that they probably wouldn't expect coming from me. But anybody that knows me, people that know you, they know that I preach, and I'm a teacher, just like I have two acting workshops per month, one on the second Wednesday of the month and then on the fourth Wednesday of the month. If anybody in Hollywood, they want to come to my acting workshop, they can come to my workshop. And and we can give them information later on where to reach out to get that.
Okay, definitely. And we also have someone on the line also that definitely want to speak to you, Sonny. You remember Sonny Ono from WCW?
Sonny Ono. I know a guy named Sonny Money.
Right. let me buzz him in right now.
Okay. Oh my God.
Sonny Ono.
Oh, he's kayfabing.
You know the. Can you hear me, Big Bamboo?
See, there you go. See, it's Mr. Big Bamboo to you.
Absolutely. All the ladies called you Big Bamboo.
Really?
I don't know I didn't know what all that was about.
Just listen to the ending, Bamboo. I mean, you know.
I'm starting to get it. It took me about 15 years now, but more than that, like 18 years. Hey, Lester Spade is one of the greatest athletes in professional wrestling that was, and it ended up being good. The end result was good, but I know this man suffered. He didn't tell you the whole story when he did have a tryout on a dark match on a Nitro. You need to tell that story because, you know, you're talking about reality TV, you're talking about suspended a reality, you know, I want to go to a movie and believe that there's actually people shooting, car chasing, blowing up and all that stuff, and people really fighting and defending you and all that emotional thing that you want to go through when you go pay your, you know, $12 and go watch a movie. Well, professional wrestling is somewhat of that because, you know, because everybody's smart now. So you go to wrestling and you want to believe that, man, look at that specimen. Lester Spade was a 300-plus man, never used any kind of foreign supplement to make himself look like that. He is a specimen of human being. And why they didn't use and give him a deal, I have somewhat of idea, but they sure missed the boat on that. What he did to him on the tryout matches is and only give him And matter of fact, I think audience even booed because none of the people believed it. You got, you know, no disrespect to the person you were having a match with, who's a very seasoned a wrestler, but you know nobody believed. Do you remember that?
His name, Sonny? What was his name? Barry something. Was he with the Midnight Express or the Rock and Roll Express? It was one of those Express tag team, blonde hair, blue eyed, white guys. I can't think of his name, but let me just say this. Sonny will tell you, he knows. In the business, Wayne, they try to, you know, the boys are always testing you. Everything's always a test. And that's just men. You work for the post office, you play pro football, whatever you do, men are going to be men. But in wrestling, it's just amped up a lot more. And so basically, I was traveling, like I was telling you. I travel all around the country driving myself, showing up at Monday Night Raw, hoping that Eric Bischoff will see me and, you know, because I'm at the power plant, so then, you know, either sometime I drive and help set the ring up. I mean, just trying to do whatever I can do to get noticed. So finally, at Kansas City, they gave me, it's called a dark match. It's the first match of the show that you don't get to see that does not televise. So basically, make long story short, they gave me three opponents before they finally gave me, I can't think of his name, Barry something. So
Bobby.
Imagine
Bobby Eaton.
Bobby Eaton. That's what it is. That's right. I had to be right. Bobby Eaton.
Right.
Bobby Eaton.
Great guy. Great, great season wrestler.
Great
man. And you know, none of these guys, I'm sorry for interjecting, but Bobby had nothing to do with the finishes. It was the people in the back that didn't, for whatever reason, I don't get it, but they did themselves a disservice by having this finish. But go ahead.
But so before I got Bobby Eaton, Wayne, they gave me whatever, let's say John Doe. So John Doe comes up to me, so I go over a four match with John Doe. So I only got 5 minutes, so it's like, all right, maybe we're going to lock up, put your hand like I'm going to shoot you, we're going to tackle. Well, and then I get the whole match down, and they go, oh, you're not going to wrestle John Doe. Oh, okay. Oh, you're going to wrestle Tom Doe. Oh, okay. All right, Doe. So, Tom, let's try this. Okay, so I'm going to lock up, get your arms back, please shoot you in the turnbuckle, come in, I'm going to get a foot, come back, get your hand. No, we're going to wrestle Bobby Eaton. Okay, all right, Bobby. So me and Bobby finally go over the match. We get in that, and so the match is set. And so Sonny didn't know this. Nobody knew this. But I knew that the only thing I could control was how long, like when they introduced me, they wanted me to get introduced and then walk down the ramp immediately. But that's not what Lester did. I was like, I'm going to stand on this ramp. I'm going to pop my pecs. I'm going to flex my arms. I'm going to sit up there woofing, breathing deep. I milked that moment. All I heard was whoever in the back was running back was like, go ahead, go, go. I didn't go. The fans, I don't know if somebody remember, fans started popping. It erupted. It's like, who the fuck is that? Oh, my God. Blah, blah, blah. And then I finally walked down slow, fans high-fiving me, all this kind of stuff. And then finally, when Bobby Eaton walked out on the ramp, the fans just started laughing. They just was laughing. It was like, oh, okay. Man, you're going to kill him. So we got in, make a long story short. I knew it's called jobbing. So the job means you got to take the count, the 1, 2, 3. So when you going to do the job, and so he'll tell you, you get most of the match. So you're winning most of them, you know, you're getting all the heat in, blah, 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 chops to the, throwing them out the corner, everything, body slams. And finally, I think I shot him in, ran in, hit the turnbuckle with my chest. He schoolboy, 1, 2, 3, bam. And the fans erupted with, that's bullshit. He can't be, remember, Sonny? They didn't buy none of that. And,
remember what I told you earlier about suspended reality. You got to make the finish believable. And schoolboy finish is probably one of the, you know, most kicked out finishes and probably in the history of wrestling. And that's how Lester you know, had his chance. And he did all the right thing. He did what the Booker told him to do, but they did him so much disservice, and they missed the boat on Lester. But what I said to you earlier is, and I said this to you, Lester, many times, is that, you know, God has a mysterious way of working out, because you made it beyond, you know, you didn't use wrestling to get somewhere and become an actor. You went to Hollywood, went to school just like you did with wrestling, and you became an actor because you went to acting school and because of all your intelligence and all that, not because you were a professional wrestler, famous guy before, you know, or other genre that you made yourself name in and got into it. You made it, into acting because what you, not because somebody else handed to you, or you use a door or pathway to get there. And so I have always said this to you. I'm very proud of you, and I'm very happy for you.
Audience, he's not lying. He's been telling me that for the last 15 years, if not longer. And you know, every time I do a little something, he see me on something. He texts me or let me know when we finally hook up. Tell him, Sonny, real quick about when you came on to the set of Transformers a few years ago.
Oh my goodness! I had my boy and his friend's birthday. They were doing this little movie called Transformer, and I, you know, of course, you know, it's just a little bitty, you know, movie, and so we go there, and Lester Hooks, my boy, you gotta understand, you know, he's like an eighth grader, and so you can imagine how big his eyes was, and he brought his friend. It was their birthday. I bought him an iPad for the first time. I think it was when it first came out. We went to Chicago. Lester invited us, brought us on a set, you know. But it's not like in a studio set. This is like downtown Chicago. They closed downtown Chicago. Who closes downtown Chicago? Transformer do. It wasn't like they were shooting this movie in a little studio somewhere in. But it was just amazing. Lester introduced us to all the actors. We got
Michael
to stand. And we got to have lunch with all the staff. We went to catering with everybody. Had mm-hmm. lunch, and I was so, I had a tears in my eyes because I was so proud of Lester. And not only that, you know how you can get in the movie and you can get cut. So when I saw Lester on the big screen with my son, you know, playing and actually having a lot of speaking part and being an actor, you know, and he was just, I was so happy for him because I know he made it. You know, he made it despite all that stuff that happened 10, 15 years before that. You know, he made it. He made it on his own. He made it on his own term. He didn't. What we say in our business, you know, he didn't prostitute himself. He did it the right way. He did it the hard way. Went to school and did all those things that, you know, I mean, easy for us to, you know, get a bit part in a movie here and there. But I'll be the first one to tell you, I did a movie too. But you know, I can kick and punch because I was a martial artist. But you know, my acting, I can't. I'm going to be the first one to tell you I can't. But Lester did it right, and like I said, to see him on a big screen and continue to see him on television and big screen and little screens, I'm so proud of this guy. He is probably the right. Matter of fact, if you say Lester Spade, nobody knew except smart guys like us, Wayne, nobody knows he was a wrestler. Really, they don't. They know Lester Spade as Terry Tate and Transformers, and you know, they know him as an actor, and which I'm so proud of him.
Yeah, it's kind of kayfabe in Hollywood, but it's funny how my fans, it's like I can't get away from wrestling, man. Everybody, you know, I did a wrestling, I think the Viking wrestling show 2 weeks ago. I was telling Sonny about it. And by the way, Wayne, you couldn't have had a better surprise for me. I didn't know, Sonny, you was going to be on the show tonight. Not too often I get, somebody give you a surprise birthday party and they go, oh, you got me. So you got me, Wayne. I don't get gotten too much because I'm always on point. At least I think I am. But Sonny was a great surprise. But, Sonny, it's funny, man, when I look back and I look at Dwayne Johnson's career, and that's what I ironed out for myself in the 80s. I'm 10 years older than Dwayne, right? So Dwayne is doing some tremendous things, but that's what I saw myself. I saw myself going to WWF at the time and wrestling for maybe 5 years and then didn't segue into acting. But football didn't play out. Wrestling didn't play out the way that I had it in my head. And if I wasn't where I needed to be at different times in my life, my whole life could be different. That's all of us, not just me. So when you don't get your blessings or what you want sometime, it's because God has a different plan for you. And even though he gives me or give people certain talents to do certain things, because many times I looked at God and go, why you let me run so fast? Or why you let me be able to do this and do that if I can't do this? Because he has a different plan for you. And that's one thing Sonny always got, and he always encouraged me when things didn't work out with wrestling. And because he understood, because Sonny's, he's got me by a few years, and he's like a big brother. And he looks good for his age, though. And but I look at Sonny like a big brother because, he's been around, he's world traveled, and he's just a hard working man. And people, if you ever need a car, and I'm going to give him a shameless plug. If you ever need a car and you're in Iowa, you stop by Sonny Ono's used car dealership.
There you go.
Send Big Bamboo sent me.
Yeah, I can get you the G6, the car, the Pontiac, or G6, the jet. I am this, either way you want to go, I can go. But listen, I don't want to take up your time. I just want to call in and say hi, that I am very proud of you, and I always thought you as my big little brother, and I've been following you, and listen, you keep it up, okay, Big Bamboo. I want to see you with a big the Oscar statue pretty soon, okay?
Oh, man. Okay, Sonny. I'm going to let you down, man. We'll talk, not tonight, we'll talk this weekend real soon. We'll catch up.
You got it. All right.
Okay.
Hey, talk to you later, Wayne. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. You too. Yes, that was the one and only Sonny Ono.
You need to tell everybody who Sonny Ono is for those who might not, who vaguely remember.
One of WCW's top managers in the 90s, managing Eugene Nagata,
Ultimate
a lot of Japanese wrestlers that came over also.
Ultimate
even
Dragon?
Also, Ernest Miller also, another one that went on to do movies also, Ernest the Cat Miller.
That's my boy, Ernest. E-E-L. That's my man, Ernest. Ernest is actually, y'all might remember Ernest from The Wrestler. He was the brother, and when I say brother, I mean a black man, a real brother. He was a brother in The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke and some of the other cats that wrestled in the movie.
Right. He was so much different than his other wrestling characters in WCW when I actually seen The Wrestler. It was actually I didn't even notice it was actually him with the character. He was another guy.
Well, Wayne, amen. Let me just tell you, was not expecting that. You got me. That was a tremendous surprise. Tremendous.
Right. Early birthday present for you.
All right, I'll take it. Are we about ready to wrap this up?
Yes, and I'm actually surprised that WWE didn't call you for one of those things they do about they can do something on their network with about celebrities that had that been in wrestling also. They could have been calling you. You could have been possibly, you know, showing your dog matches of WCW.
You know what? I would love – that would be interesting. Now, you put that out in the universe like that, now watch something like that may come to fruition, because I would love to see that match. I never got the chance to see that match. But I remember the audience reaction was – I almost laughed walking back up the ramp, because they just – like like Sonny was saying – you got to have some realism in there that the fans can actually – it's just like going to the movies, right? When you go to the movies, you know that you're getting ready to go into play imagination, you know. You know that nothing in the movie really is actually really happening. Like, the helicopter blew up, but the person – nobody got killed, right? You know, people getting shot in the scene, nobody really died. You understand what I'm saying, Wayne? So so it's like once it's like you ever seen a movie and you saw the boom mic hanging off at the top of the movie,
right?
And that kind of throws you off. You're like, oh, look at the boom mic, right? It kind of takes you out the scene, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Or you see, it's called continuity. So if you see like a cup was on the table, and then the next take. Or a different shot, the cup ain't the teacup ain't on the table, and then the next shot, it kind of takes you like So when you go to the movies, you want to stay in the realism of the movie through the whole movie, correct?
Right, the suspension of disbelief.
Right. Well, in wrestling, it's the same thing. So that match put people in disbelief, like, no way Bobby Eaton could be beating this brother right here on his best day. But the bookers in the back didn't, you know, they wanted to see how I was going to react to having to lose. And I think part of it is sometimes seeing how humble you're going to be, you know, is he going to be hard to work with? Because I can give you one more quick story. When I went in to meet Michael Bay, that's kind of what I went through to a degree. So I get a call from my agent after going through the audition, and everybody came out for this part. For Hardcore Eddie, everybody came out. I mean, I can drop names at you right now, like Michael Strahan, Warren Sapp, all the big boys around Hollywood came out for this part. But my reputation started to exceed me a little bit, and so when I was coming down the hallway, cats was walking by me because they just got finished the audition, and it was like, oh man, we might just forget it now, and so in my mind I'm speaking to cats, hey, what's up, man? Hey, what's going on? Hey, you know, but deep down inside I'm like, yeah, all y'all might as well just leave because I'm about to crush this, and I got it. So make a long story short, when Michael Bay calls me in to meet with him, he basically, after going through it, going through the meeting with him, I didn't know what to expect. So I walk into his office, and he has this giant conference table, and he's got like Transformers 2 or up or something like. No, he's got some stuff with Transformers 3, and you know he's in pre-production, and he basically is sitting at one end of the table, and I'm at the other end, and I basically have to raise your voice to talk. Hey, man, yeah, how you doing today? Doing good, Mike. How you doing? Great. There's a little dead air. Like, your Terry Tate stuff was really funny. Thank you. And so basically he decides to get up, come up a little closer. And he says, so when you on set sometime, you know, you get angry, you pretty cool most of the time. And I'm like, yeah, I'm silly. I like to play around. As soon as I said that, he lit up. He said, yeah. So, like, you know, if I came up to you in where I was sitting, he could come up to me and he could punch me in my chest. So I come up to you, I'm going to punch you in your chest. I can punch you in your chest. I'm like, yeah, you can punch me in my chest. I mean, like, So he was basically, Wayne was sizing me up to see was I going to be a prima donna on set or I was going to be a hothead. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So sometimes people want to know where your level of coolness is before they want to give you a push, before they want to promote you, before they want to, endorse you. They want to know that you are level-headed, cool, calm, collective, all the three C's. You follow what I'm saying?
Right.
So it happens even like in wrestling. When I look back, I they give me somebody like Bobby Eaton. Like he was like a wounded soldier, and Bobby Eaton was in his 50s at the time, I think. You know, or late 40s. I would say he was late 40s, and here I am in my 30s. You know, late 30s, and it's like, maybe he wasn't that old, but I'm just saying he didn't look like he could whoop your ass. Let alone mine, okay? And, but I had to be humble enough to say, okay, I'll go in there. I'll let them 1, 2, 3 me and come back with a positive attitude. And then as I'm thinking now, that's kind of the same correlation with Michael. Michael liked to play with the big guys on set. So I'm the big guy on set. He wants to be able to, see, Michael Bay is very territorial. He is, he has to control the whole environment, and he turns into the character, the director, Michael Bay. He's not the same guy. He don't walk like people hear stories about him yelling and screaming. I've never heard him yelling and screaming in a restaurant. I've eaten in restaurants with him, you know. So he's different. He don't go around acting the way he acts when he's on set. When he's on set, he's in his character. He's in a certain character because he has a job to do. He has to get this movie done. And when things don't go right or, he likes things to be cleared. If it's cluttered, he might yell and scream, get that shit out of here, blah, blah. And that's just like any other football coach, you know, or basketball coach that likes to yell and scream, you know. So Vince Lombardi screamed and yelled. He won, they named the Super Bowl trophy after him. So I think Michael Bay's all right, man. He hired me, and I was glad to be a part of that project and that success Transformers is today. So, all right, man, it's past my bedtime.
All right. Yeah, it's an honor to be on for you to be on Wrestling X Factor Radio. You can come back to the show anytime.
If I come back, man, you got to bring me another surprise guest.
Definitely will. Try and get a rabbit out the hat, probably something like that.
Yeah, and I'm gonna let my boy, his name is David Coleman, and he used to wrestle out of Independent in Maryland. I'm gonna let him know about this podcast so he can chime in. He's got some Lester Spate stories too. Him and I used to travel all the time, man, in the late 80s, 90s, up and down the East Coast, Tennessee, I think we wrestled in Kentucky before, New York and Brooklyn. I wrestled there, Teamsters Hall, just up and down in Boston, of course, we've been up there. And it's just, when people got to just appreciate where you are, stop trying to fast forward your life. Be in the moment because the sun is going to come up and it's going to go down and it's doing it so fast. I don't know what time is going. You look up and, 5 years is gone, 10 years is gone, 20 years is gone. My daughter now is 3. I remember when she was born 3 years ago. Now blink and she's 3. And in 10 months, she'll be 4. It's just crazy. So, I was just telling her mother, I was like, well, I don't know what we're going to do, I gotta get some stuff together because our birthday is gonna be here again. And when it is when kids are 4, that's when they really start remembering things. So you can't just come with no little, weak ass birthday party. You just do that the first 1 or 2, 3 years. For the 4th year, you got to start, come with some real deal. So, but good luck to you, Wayne, man, you and your show. And just for people, so people know that Wayne is very assertive. He don't know me personally. He just reached out to me on Facebook, and I checked him out on Facebook, and I when I see people trying to do good, and if I can help them, then I'll try to help them, man, make time for them. So you got an hour out of my life, and I wish you continued success with your show and your audience. They can find me on Facebook, right, Lester Spade. Instagram is Lester Spade. What's the other one? Twitter. It's all one brand. And I do have a movie I'm getting ready to start shooting coming up called Halloween. We're going to start shooting that. It's going to be my first horror movie. And the first thing that I made sure that I checked with my agent was I don't die in the first 5 minutes of the damn movie. Because, you know, black folks don't make it through the first 10 minutes of a horror movie. You know, we're the sacrificial lambs. Am I right, Wayne?
Exactly.
So, I'm through the whole movie. I play Sheriff Johnson. And so we got a lot of things slated up, coming up for the second half of this year. I got another two movie projects. We're getting ready to do Nat Turner, The Prophet, The Story of a Prophet. I don't know if you know what Nat Turner is, Wayne. But he was the slave who started the Southern insurrection of slavery down south.
Right.
And you get a chance to look at Nat Turner, right? I'm getting ready to do my first slave movie. I don't just have one slave movie, Wayne, I'm getting ready to do two, if you can believe that. And got another movie called Jubilee, and that's going to be a very heartfelt movie, too. But Nat Turner is getting ready to be the truth, because, you know, he was doing drive-bys on white slave masters. He was killing them, and he had his crew with him. So, So got a lot of stuff going on, man. Just check in with me, and I'll keep you posted. Or you see stuff posted on my Facebook or Twitter. We keep it pushing.
Sure, definitely. I will keep you posted.
Okay. All right.
All right. You have a good night.
Okay, I enjoyed you guys, man. Y'all take care the next time.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Lester Speaks. Yes, if you want to get in contact or looking for this archive episode, go to Wrestling It Factor radio show page on Facebook or Wrestling It Factor radio group page. Also for our for archives there or blogtalkradio.com under Wrestling It Factor Radio for Lester Speaks. Yes, also what's going on in wrestling news right now, I don't want to spoil it with nobody, but Eric Rowan and Luke Harper are back as a tag team again, as a heel tag team. A great move from WWE traders finally, since things wasn't working out for Eric Rowan as a babyface. This is Wayne Benitez signing off. Later.
Yeah. Your heart, 'cause I know you got soul.
the top.